Hey, Kendra.
I wanted to test my earbuds. Can you talk to me?
Yeah, so you sound good on this end.
Okay, perfect. Because I have guests today, so I wanted to not make them have to listen to this.
Yeah, no, you sound just fine on this end.
Is that a little bit of Law and Order back there?
No.
Uh-oh.
Nobody has gotten this one yet.
It's the oldest fake computer I've ever seen.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So let me take a look here. So it's clearly a law office, right? Looks like a lawyer's den, doesn't it?
An office, not specifically a law office.
Okay.
I'm thinking maybe Bob Newhart now.
No.
It is a cartoon, not a cartoon, I guess, animation.
Okay, you've lost me now. Are you going to tell us? Or are we going to? Oh.
It stays up till somebody guesses it.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm starting to run out of my unending supply, so I'm not giving them away anymore.
Well, that's all right. You can cycle back through them because I won't remember what the IDs were anyway. Yeah. So. It has been interesting watching news programs and different Zoom conferences and the book backgrounds for different people in the news, and how some people have really neat organized bookshelves like in your background there, and then some people have very messy bookshelves with books scattered all over the place. And you always wonder, are people trying to make some kind of a statement, or is that just the way it is? My book background would be very messy. So,
Good morning.
My bookshelf, I have a couple of them, run roughly half and half vertical versus horizontal books.
That would drive me crazy.
That just shows that you're using your books, Tim, instead of just lining them up neatly, never to be touched again, right?
No, what it shows is that every once in a while I'll run out of something to read and I will start rifling through the bookshelves that my wife may have organized, and I'll take out 15 or 20 books and just throw them back in randomly until they get fixed later. And I don't know about you, I find it almost impossible to reread a book, no matter how good it was. I just going back, I think I'm going to do it, and I'll get a book out and I'll start rereading it. And about 10 pages in, no, I know how this story ends.
Lord of the Rings. I think I read that whole series probably 10 or 15 times.
Really? Wow.
If it's been long enough where I can't really remember the story, I'll reread it. I have a couple different big series that I've had for a long time. I'm just starting to reread the Left Behind series. It's like an 11 or 12 book series. Mm. And I think I read it like 20 years ago. It's one of two series that actually made all the moves with me.
Oh, that's good. Well, it's nice that we can have our book club here on Monday morning. I see Mark is joining us. That's good. Back from Wyoming, huh?
With the empty bookshelf.
No, we hadn't seen. That's a new style on the bookshelf, Mark. I like that.
I love moving. I'm telling you. Wow.
Well, if the sign of a cluttered bookshelf is a cluttered mind. What's the sign of an empty bookshelf?
What? Yeah, a lot of things able to rattle around in that brain if with that empty bookshelf.
Well, Tim and I can give you an update on our parade activities this weekend if you'd be interested.
Please do, Beth. Tell everyone. It was good. It was the best.
I thought it was great. I loved it. And the donkey is like new. Donkey's looking good. But yeah, they did the, you know, the drive through. And I don't know. I thought it was really great.
It was way better.
It was hot, but it was good.
It was way better than walking down the middle of Lincoln Avenue under a hot sun. With people viewing you like you're saying.
Agreed.
Good morning, Doug.
Morning.
All right, I guess the relevant parties are assembled. Mark, we saw your update via email. Thank you for that. But we'll let you recap that.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, commissioners. We had a really, and I know Beth is going to probably take a few minutes to visit about the recovery call this morning, but a lot of really important information and items that were discussed this morning and some relevance to the items, some of the items that I put in my report in some of the things that I'll comment on today. So maybe what I'll do is I'll kind of go slowly through this, and then if you want to chime in, and we want to have more dialogue about this, please, by all means, feel free. The first thing is good news, and actually I was a little off in my description for you, but the application for the CARES funding into the DOLA portal has indeed been completed. Dan was just super efficient, and through his efforts and that of the accounting office, we were able to go ahead and put everything into the DOLA portal. We thanks also to Eric for being the repository for all those signature pages that came in from the other jurisdictions. We were able to get a completed cooperative agreement. And of course, as we all know, that had to be an attachment that went in with that particular application. So it's good that we are under the gun before July 7th, and we've got that done and completed. And thanks again. Tim, thank you. I know you were instrumental in those conversations with all the other jurisdictions and reaching that cooperative agreement. And I agree with the comment you made in your email back. Thanks to everybody for working together. It's really a sign of collaboration on the part of everybody.
So that may also have been an example of me rolling up like a cheap suitcase as well. Would be another way to describe it.
I think the important message that we underscored is that we want to make sure that we all collectively make maximum use of those dollars. So there's check-in points that we've built in that we can go back and see how everybody's doing in terms of the expenditure of those funds. If we don't feel like either we're going to have a balance or we anticipate a balance, we can do a redistribution to make sure once again that we're using the maximum amount of dollars that have been allocated to us. We had, you may recall a few weeks ago, commissioners, Kathy brought forward to you an overview of the classification compensation schedule study that was undertaken by CPSHR. I think they did a really excellent job in consolidating some of the categories that we had, clarifying what we had as far as some of those job descriptions, updating those, making sure that they were reflective of what's going on right now within the workplace. And also, you know, and that's really important that you do that on a frequent basis, that you begin to condense your job description. So in other words, you begin to go ahead and provide for what is more uniform categories rather than have all these outliers and have these individual descriptions for positions. So it's a good exercise to go through. It's a housekeeping in a sense, but I think that it was well done by CPSHR. So now we've been involved in the outreach to our department heads and our managers in walking them through what was accomplished, what is now within that draft, and making sure that we've got a generous period of time that we can entertain any questions and provide any feedback on that going forward. And once that period is over, which would just be a matter of a few more weeks, then we're going to be prepared to bring that back to you, to the commissioners, to go ahead and make sure that you approve what is that final form of that classification compensation study. So let me end there and see if there's any questions on that. Okay, moving on. Budget. Thank you very, very much, commissioners, for your introductory remarks and your very important feedback relative to the budget for FY21. We had a really, a really good discussion of our budget this last week with all the department managers. We reinforced some of the goals and objectives and the strategic plans that we've got as we build that budget, trying to be as efficient as we possibly can, trying to look where there's cost savings, where we can work smarter, underscoring the fact that we want to, as Tim pointed out, we had pushed the pause button on capital to an extent in FY20. We want to avoid that if at all possible in FY21. And we just want to be able to go ahead and be as flexible and nimble as possible as we go ahead and we build this budget for the balance of this fiscal year. There are many, many meetings that are coming up. As I mentioned in my report, it's a very ambitious schedule, but there's every opportunity for us to go ahead and make sure that the commissioners are plugged in as you hear an overview of each of those departmental budgets, any adjustments that we feel are necessary going forward. One of the things that I've asked everybody to do and which we'll continue to monitor is to try and be as efficient with and budget and time conscious in terms of the presentations and the information we present back to you, the commissioners, because I know this can be an elongated process. It can be very cumbersome. So what we're going to do is we're going to say if there's ways that we can streamline and still provide you the most important information, we're going to certainly do that going forward. And let me pause there again and see if there's any questions. Hey, good.
Yeah, I have a question, Mark.
You bet, Tim.
So we're still asking our department directors to prepare two separate budgets. Is that correct?
Good question, Tim. What we've asked them to do is to prepare a 10% cut to the first budget that was approved for FY20. So let me just clarify and make sure there's no confusion on this. The adopted budget, as we began your fiscal year, when we went ahead and went back into that budget, again, this is FY20, and we did an 11% reduction to that for your new amended budget. We're asking the department heads to take the original budget for FY20 and to go ahead and make sure that there's a minimum of a 10% cut to that particular budget going forward. So in essence, commissioners, the simple way to explain it is the new amended budget that you have right now that we're right now in play, that's in place, that will pretty much replicate what we're asking all the departmental managers to do for FY21. Now, one of the exceptions to that, in some respects, is going to be the airport, because as you're certainly aware, we were fortunate enough to get CARES Act funding specifically directed to the airport. So we want to make sure that we maximize the use of those funds. So you may find that when Kevin builds that airport budget, it's going to actually have a little more, using an airport, a little more lift because of the fact that it's got that additional CARES Act funding coming in. We're also telling them, Tim, to get back to your question, we're also telling the department heads and managers, be prepared if you need to go to a 12% budget cut. So in another additional 2%, if necessary, depending on where we are and where we're tracking in terms of our revenues and as we monitor that going forward. So in essence, yes, both a 10% scenario and a 12% scenario, again, dependent on where we are with revenues. I know I covered a lot of KIV territory there. Happy to answer any questions.
So maybe more of a comment than a suggestion, but you know, this is part of the reason we tried to get going with priority-based budgeting, because the concept of across-the-board cuts, certainly within some departments, don't make any sense at all. For instance, take our legal department. How would Eric go about making a 10 or 12% cut short of reducing hours of his limited staff? Same thing could be said of the BCC budget or many of our departments. So while it kind of sounds good that we're asking each department to do 10 or 12% cuts in a perfect world, we would be looking at eliminating specific programs.
You bet. Tim, here's the excellent points. And here's the really good news. We are already at that 10% budget cut right now. So we've already gone through that exercise with all the departments. Now, you're exactly right, Tim. In some instances, some departments that are more service-oriented within your elected officials' realms, they maybe didn't get to the 10%. We got to the 10% overall by going to Public Works, and maybe they dug a little bit deeper. So that balanced that out as far as at the bottom line, we averaged across all departments that 10% cut. So the good news is, again, Tim, we've gone through this. Everybody, I think, was very vigilant in identifying where they could cut, and we were able to get to our, we actually, quite frankly, commissioners, we actually cut 11% as you round up for our amended budget for FY20.
But the reality is we got virtually all of that out of deferring capital projects, right?
We did. You may recall we did not fill some positions. For instance, your deputy county manager. There was a position that was loaded in Public Works that was going to be a new director for Ray. We didn't load that in. So there were a number of personnel titles that were not also loaded in, and that made a difference, especially with the benefits that went with it. But yeah, Tim, if you look at one department in terms of where we found more significant cost savings, absolutely, it was within the Public Works realm. So commissioners,
I'd like to comment on too. So I don't know that we need the silly priority based budget program to do what we need to do. Those guys need to be out there looking at everything that they do every day and to know what, you know, what's included in their programs that they're providing. There's nothing for them not to say that they couldn't cut that now from that stuff. So I don't know, again, so yeah, we saved $30,000, so anyhow.
I wasn't trying to wave the red flag in front of the bull this morning. It was just more a generalized comment about.
I know, Tim, but it's my pet peeve. But those guys should be doing those. Every one of those should be doing that every day. Is there something we'd really, you know, I keep saying that. I think we're down to a pretty lean and mean machine right now, and we need to stay that way. And there's not a lot to cut when you're in, and I don't know, there's a lot of fluff out here. So anyhow.
Well, going back to my original question. So for FY21, Mark, we're not really asking our department directors to prepare two separate budgets. They're working on one budget that's as lean and mean as it can be. Is that more accurate?
It is, Tim. And what we've told them to do, thank you for the chance to clarify. We've told them to have in your back pocket, if you will, have another 2%. If we need to come back then make sure you've got a list off to the side that you can go back to that and if you have to dig a little bit deeper. So no, we're asking them to prepare that 10% target, if you will, and then have 2% in reserve if we need to come back and have that next level of cuts. Yeah, which hopefully we won't.
So then are department directors generally using the revised 2020 budget as a starting point?
That's exactly right, Tim. Okay. That's exactly right. You bet. You bet. And commissioners, and I think, it, and let me repeat this, but I think you've heard me say this before, that in terms of trying to develop the most flexible, the most cost-efficient budget that we can, we want to use a scalpel. We don't want to use a sledgehammer. So when I say 10%, we're doing that strategically across those departments. So we're not saying every single department has to be cut by 10%. We're simply saying that that is our overall target of where we feel we need to be. And of course that, you know, this day and age, that is the smarter way to approach it, and not do it across the board where, you know, it hurts us in terms of delivery of certain services and programs. Certainly in a COVID environment right now, that's especially true.
So I think the positive side is that, I mean, if the glass is half full here is the fact that, you know, we're going to do this without any pay reductions to anybody right now. We're going to go through them. We still haven't talked about the step and I doubt there's going to be a CPI increase, but anyhow, so, I mean, we're doing all of this and keeping our consistent services with reduced revenues and maintaining salaries and taking care of our priorities in my mind, which are our employees. So I just want to remind ourselves that we're I think that's a hell of a good deal.
Doug, I think it is, and you're right. We've not had that more specific conversation about where we are with any compensation adjustments, but I've already forewarned the department managers that you know, in this current revenue environment, that may be something that we simply can't make that adjustment. Now, the good news is, because that, as you know, that could be a big ticket item, it appears as if, knock on wood, it appears as if that we are holding line as far as our health and our health insurance premium costs. And that's good news, because sometimes you can see a spike and that sometimes turns out to be a big number into your budget with as many personnel as you have. So that right now, it looks like we've got some optimistic good news on the health insurance front.
That's because he couldn't get in to do anything because he only could do essential services. So we got locked out of the medical system. So
don't worry, me and Doug will take care of that here in the last 6 months, right, Doug?
or there's actually been a lot of people that have been homemade medical things that they're doing. I think we've gone back to that pioneering spirit in terms of medicine.
I just one comment, kind of going back to what Tim and Doug were talking about on the priority-based concept. And I know we've tried to sort of separate the concept of priority-based budgeting from the software, which is a tool to help with that, right? You know, the idea of each department cutting 10%, I guess I'm just curious, in terms of what Tim was talking about, you know, what kind of strategies or advice could we give to our department heads to look at? Maybe there are some programs that are less necessary, if you will, or could be suspended or whatever else, in order to help save more than that 10% to enable us to really maintain the most critical services. And so that's ideally is what the software program is supposed to do, but we haven't quite gotten it to a point where we're ready to use it that way. But it doesn't mean we couldn't think about the concept. And so I guess I'm curious, what kind of message or support you could give to department heads in just thinking about the budget that way. And I guess one thought I have on that is just exactly what you said, Mark, which is if we can identify those kinds of cuts or cost savings, then it's less likely that we have to do an across the board salary cut. And so to me, that's the compelling reason for department heads to try to identify those maybe even greater savings than that 10%. If possible. So just would be curious for your thoughts on that.
Beth, thank you. You're spot on. And that's exactly the conversation we had when we entered into our FY20 budget adjustments. And I was, I repeated this over and over again. The more you can identify that we can go ahead and we can cut out of our expenditures, then we're going to be in a better place in terms of protecting our employees, in terms of keeping them at their current salary compensation levels, and keeping the staffing that we've got right now. So, you know, again, dig deep, you know, use a good scalpel, because the better you are in doing that, accomplishing that, then it means that we're helping ourselves on the personnel side. So the same particular philosophy will be in place as we build that 21 budget. The other thing, Beth, and please know that always when I've been involved with building budgets, it's always important that in each and every instance, you ask as you go down the line in a line item budget, and you say, do you really need that program? Do we really need that service? And ask that question, yes or no, or can it be deferred? And that's its own sense of prioritization that you make, but it's always a very important conversation you need to have. And I'm very, very diligent in going through and making sure I scrutinize those and ask those very important questions. If we're not using it right now, if it's not turned out to be valuable, if it's not accomplishing some of it, it's not contributing to your goals and objectives and strategic plan, then should we still be doing it? So we'll be involved in priority-based budgeting from that particular standpoint.
So, you know, we're kind of the victim of our past conservative philosophy of providing services within Rock County. I mean, we don't do recreation. We don't do hardly anything in the way of fluff. So when we get down to making those decisions, we really are talking about not delivering a service that we are currently delivering. And that's going to be a tough thing to find. But having said that, I think what you suggested, Mark, is the right way to approach it. I mean, ask the hard question. Don't take anything for granted and move through it.
You bet. The next thing, if everybody is comfortable with our budget discussion, commissioners, the next thing I was going to just talk about very briefly is the graduated reopening to the annex, which is underway today. And we are following pretty much the same pattern that we did in terms of the graduated reopening of the historic courthouse, following those same good protocols. And in the same way that we had to make some adjustments 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours in on the historic courthouse, we'll do the same thing with the annex. As we start to see, you know, traffic flow, ingress, egress, and need to make any modifications or adjustments, we'll be prepared to go ahead and do that. I also mentioned in the recovery call this morning that we're in good company. The fact that the City of Steamboat is reopening today, their city hall facilities. And I also saw that the newspaper office is reopening their particular office facility. So I think we're all going to continue to be very vigilant and very careful and cautious, and making sure that we protect not only our staff and our employees, but also the fact that we, our customers and our patrons are going to be also in a very safe place. Having said all that, we come back around to the fact that if there's still a way that we can ask our customers and our patrons to work remotely with their service, whatever service they need, if they can do that on a remote platform, then please do so. In the same way, we're still going to allow staff members, if we can still provide our efficient services, and there's a way that we can do that in a remote framework, that we can continue that going forward. So that's, again, I'll be glad to provide ongoing information about that. But if you do travel to the courthouse facility today, you'll see that we're in the graduated reopening mode. Steve in facilities planning and Ray are right on top of that and will provide me with periodic updates in terms of where we stand. The last thing, and I did want to make sure that I brought this up as our final important topic is at the encouragement or with the encouragement of the commissioners, I reached out to our municipal partners and asked them if they could provide us with some assistance for some of those volunteer activities that we were undertaking in the last several weeks relative to COVID-19. More specifically, testing, because you recall that we were kind of scrambling in some instances to get volunteers for our testing sites, sometimes right up to the moment. So I did provide that note to all the municipal managers and administrators, and I got some encouragement. Number one, I got specific names and contact information from the city of Steamboat Springs from Gary. And then Matthew said that when there is the next test opportunity in Hayden, that Matt said that they would be available to supply some personnel as well. So we're getting good cooperation along those lines. And I know Beth has been engaged in some very important conversations with the council president with Steamboat, and we're engaging some of the law enforcement personnel to talk about how we can assist with our education and monitoring / enforcement going forward, try and move to that protect your neighbor. And Beth, you may want to chime in on that as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to. Just had a good conversation with Jason, just starting that initial outreach as we talked about around protect our neighbors. And most, you know, starting with just identifying the fact that we're going to need strong partnership from our municipal partners in order to really move forward. We need their support in lots of ways, but particularly around the education and when necessary enforcement around the public health rules. I think it's obvious that we can have all the rules in the world, but if nobody's following them, then we're not really protecting public health. And so just had a good, I've only talked with Jason so far, but had a good conversation with him. And following that, he agreed that it made sense, as Eric had requested, to have the attorneys and the managers and law enforcement have some conversation. Just to identify the right role for law enforcement in those efforts, as well as any other staff that might participate. As you guys know, the county has been contributing staff to those education and monitoring efforts outside of law enforcement. And there hopefully would, I would think, be some opportunity for our municipal partners to do that as well. And so I believe, Mark, I know that you were gone. So I assume, based on what Eric said this morning on our recovery call, that that you all are proceeding with scheduling that meeting, at least with Steamboat. And I'll have some follow-up conversation with the policymakers in our other municipalities, and hopefully we can have a similar conversation. I think that's going to be the most important component of preparing the infrastructure for Protect Our Neighbors, is having their participation and support in that education, monitoring, compliance, and again, when necessary, enforcement on the public health rules, whether there are the county rules or the state rules. It's just, if people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, then we're not going to have the opportunity to move forward, I don't think. So that, I don't know, Mark, if you would add anything to that piece, I don't, or if Eric has anything he'd like to say about that meeting, but.
I'm gonna let Eric chime in if I know he's on the call and see if he wants to add some additional information. But Beth, I thought that was, that's a good, and we are setting up that meeting so that we can have that collective discussion to include not only the managers, administrators, but also law enforcement as well. And again,
I'll add one other thing. When I talked to Jason, his sense was, this is something that should be worked on, but it should be worked on at the staff level before it comes to council. And what he was looking for was for staff to put together some recommendations that could be given to council. And I indicated to him that while I completely understand the budget situation and challenge that they are in, There is a significant amount of that CARES Act money, and Kim is doing everything she can to figure out how they can use that to fill their budget shortfall, but it's probably appropriate for them to be willing to make some additional expenditures in the same way that the county has. And he agreed with that conceptually. I mean, I know it's a huge challenge, but I do think that direction is gonna have to come from the council, you know, maybe at the recommendation of staff, but that was part of the conversation as well.
That's why we have you doing this, Beth, because you're more diplomatic about it than either Doug or I.
Diplomatic's my middle name, Tim, except when I don't feel very diplomatic, but I can sort of pull it off. And then the other thing that I said was in regards to the role of law enforcement, I understand the reticence for us to create this police state where you're busting down people's doors and, you know, have law enforcement on the street, but I don't necessarily think that has to be the way they approach it. But we do need their help and their support for lots of reasons, many of which Eric illuminated for us on Friday in a little more detail. And, you know, the other thing I said is there's two sides to that, right? We know that if a police officer shows up, everybody's suddenly going to be in compliance as well. So we definitely, I think it's a collaborative approach to figuring out what everybody's role is in making sure that we have compliance, because compliance is the goal, not enforcement. So anyway, sorry, Eric, I see that you want to maybe add some comments.
Actually, I'd like to interrupt before Eric gets started. Beth, the question I have for you is, have we already, or is there a consensus that we've done the analysis and we believe that moving to protect our neighbors is to our advantage, or is that still an ongoing process?
My answer would be no. I think we need more information other than the 500 person gathering size about what we gain by being in Protect Our Neighbors. But I feel confident that the Protect Our Neighbors framework is valuable to our community. You know, so even if we don't make that application, or we make that application not until September, I think that the way they've laid out the metrics and the necessity of the partnerships, I think that using that framework and using the goal of Protect Our Neighbors has a lot of value for us in building the capacity of the public health system to be not just our, you know, three Route County public health employees, but involving a much broader group. So I see value in that, regardless of where we end up with the application itself. So that's my consensus with myself, is what I...
I really like that, Beth. I mean, I don't mean that like in the consensus yourself, but I mean, I like the us having that conversation, as Tim said, too, because, you know, we could apply for a variance for 500 people or something like that based on criteria. It's the other stuff that I'm more concerned about is what else comes with it. And I actually really appreciate the conversation about the partnerships. I don't know how, well, we're the Board of Health. Well, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. We got a huge tax for that, don't we? To supply, to fund that. So, you know, so we're responsible for everything. So you guys all know me. It's a lot of personal responsibility out here for people too. So how we get there.
And I think, you know, in a normal public health environment, it's fine for the county to be primarily responsible for this. And we are still primarily responsible for this, but it's just not possible for us to do everything in this current environment. And so to me, the argument for participation from our municipal partners is they want to support the businesses in this community. They want to support a strong economic environment. And the way to do that is to be a partner in making sure that we're protecting public health. And they don't have to be the public health experts, but we do need them to commit some resources and some participation and partnership so that we're all working on this together. And honestly, as I work through this framework, I'm like, man, this would have been great for building our public health system, you know, 3 months ago. So kudos to the state in coming up with a framework. And what I think they probably believe is kind of a carrot, honestly, for communities to do the work to get there, which is this kind of more decision, local decision-making ability in terms of managing this. So I see a lot of benefit in it, regardless of where we end up with the actual application.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, the whole thing, them helping us is an investment into the recovery. And I think that's all of our situations. I mean, it's, and goes back to the masks. I keep saying, well, don't forget about it being whatever the rule, the law.
Right.
It's an investment in the, and I think everybody's starting to, I mean, see that. The other thing that gets me too is the enforcement concept versus the reward concept. So, you know, and it being a proactive and versus the, yeah, I don't know. And again, all of this is, we're just trying to do, trying to get 80% compliance. It's like speeding tickets, you know, so whatever.
Absolutely. Okay, now can Eric talk?
Sure, fine with me.
The risk of nauseating anybody on a Monday morning, I'll go on video.
You look great, Eric. There's benefits to living with a hairdresser, right?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I mean, look what happened to Tim.
Yeah.
Looking good. So I don't have a whole lot to add. I'm just trying to meet with Scott Kalman ahead of time, because I think he's put a lot of effort into trying to identify what mitigation looks like on the ground, because there was a question about what is the actual deliverables? What are we asking the partners to commit to? And I think we need to go in with a list of our asks and be prepared for that, as Beth pointed out in her email from last Thursday or Friday, or else we're not going to really make a whole lot of progress other than patting each other on the back. And so that's, and I don't really know what the deliverables are, other than more broadly defined compliance. I would start with maybe a recognition that it is a law enforcement function at this point. That would be a positive start in my mind, because that hasn't even occurred yet. In some departments. I don't have anything else to add. I do, if we're still on county manager time, talking about budgets, it was really interesting exercise really for me to look at the 10%, 11% cut. When you have a personnel budget that's roughly 470,000 and an operations budget that's roughly 16,000, mm-hmm. How do you get to 10%? And the programming, I think our department, again, is very, very different where programming is concerned. These are services offered to various departments, including the commissioners. And what do you do if you cut programming? You say, okay, we're not going to provide any, I don't know, representation to the airport. It looks very, very different depending on the department that you're looking at. I don't like claiming that the county attorney's office is always the exception to the rule. It doesn't look good, I don't think, or sound good. But some departments, I think, are the exception.
Dandy, I think it's just an I.
Well, Eric, we like the proactive the legal as well, just to being on the right side of things instead of having to spend a bunch of money to recapture and go where we shouldn't have been, and not doing the things we should have done at some point in time too. So I think that's the same thing with road and bridge. If we've got a bridge going out, it's really going to go out. It's going to cost us $1 million to fix it if we don't do something with it. So, you know, spending a buck today to save $10 tomorrow, that's, you know, it was a good dollar spent.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Mark?
So I have one other, unless we, before we go to Eric. So we just got an email from Kim Bonner on, so do we want to talk about that now or do we want to
talk about it? I assumed somebody was going to bring it up at some point.
I mean, it's a good point. It was an excellent point. I mean, just right now, everybody that's been going out and doing things are the ones that are bringing things back. And so, in fact, that's part of the situation that the new one that they had at Casey's Pond as well. So some, you know, so.
I do think that discussion is appropriate for our discussion with Eric, because I did email back to Kim that I was at least going to bring it up during today's meeting, but I suspect there's some legal ramifications around what we can tell employees to do and not do and where to travel and where not to travel.
I'll just say Eric and Mark were both on this recovery call this morning. Carrie indicated that Dr. Harrington had some suggestions for a policy, and she was going to get in touch with him to clean that up and send us over those recommendations. So I don't know what Eric or Mark's thoughts are, but I'd be happy to at least take a look at what he has to say.
Well, before we, let's just go ahead and transition into our legal discussion with Eric. And if we want to talk about this first, I guess my question would be, maybe not even from a legal standpoint, the whole idea of us telling employees where they can travel, when they can travel, is something that I'm going to struggle with on a personal level.
I would just preface that was not my assumption. My assumption is that we would have some kind of policy that dictates what happens if they do travel to these places when they get back. You know, some kind of quarantine or some kind of work from home for a period of time, something like that is what I was picturing.
Well, I guess that's a pretty fine distinction that you're making there that kind of falls all under the same heading to me. But I'm open-minded, anxious to hear the conversation.
So while we still have a free world here, you know, so these people can do that. So I guess my thoughts were just when I read the email was the thought that, well, maybe we'd have them get a first online to get a test too, you know, if they were in some place like that and got a test right when they got back or 2 days after they got back or something like that. And that we allowed for that to happen too, so that they're not spreading amongst our community. So Eric, sorry.
All good. So I talked to Kim last Thursday, and she asked pretty much the same question in her email. And we talked about the current mitigation protocol, which is required by all businesses, as you know. The mitigation protocol that's posted at the front of our facilities has nothing in it that pertains to employees that travel in and out of Brough County. In the protocol, there is a section that says, please describe any mitigation that your business does in consideration of any employees that travel in and outside of Brough County. So even more, instead of just out of state, it includes any travel outside of the county. And so it's blank, that section. And so Kim and I talked about her mitigation protocol, and she had not addressed it there either. Quite frankly, neither does mine. So I need to fix that as well. But my hope is that we do this more broadly and applicable to the county, because we're going to end up with conflicts, maybe not personal conflicts, but just practice conflicts if each department gets to design their own policy, really, about what happens with an employee that travels outside of the county. It looks like Beth has something to say, but maybe not to us.
No, I'm talking to Clark over here. I'm helping him figure out how to spell dragons. Do you guys need any help with that, or are you all right?
I don't. Is that in reference to our county attorney, or is that in?
I don't know. He started listening to Eric talk, and he said, "Mama, how do you spell dragons?"
So. All right. So we are. Two rungs below car salesmen, attorneys, that is.
So Eric, that was nicely put in terms of crafting a more broad-based policy for the county. So I guess I'm hearing from you that there may be some merit in directly addressing that kind of question that Kim presented on a countywide basis.
Well, apparently public health has as well. So my recommendation is that we loop back to this during the COVID-19 work session time which is the last item of today's agenda. I also told Kim that that I was going to bring this up, and I was probably not going to do that before that COVID-19 work session. So she may want to join us, but hopefully that'll give us the opportunity to look at what apparently Dr. Harrington has already put together about policies, and it was more broad than just the county sort of public health recommendations when dealing with employees that travel. So if we can wait to have this discussion a little bit later, maybe we'll have that in hand that might guide us a little bit better.
No, that sounds great to me, Eric. Would you like to proceed with the rest of your update? And asking that, is there going to be any reason to go into executive session today?
No.
Okay, good. Carry on, please.
I can't read my own writing again. There's an agenda item on tomorrow concerning the extension of the disaster declaration. Just wanted to draw your attention to that. I would be asking Linnea to present on that again tomorrow. Then the only other item I have is just an update on the Senate Bill 217 discussions I'm having with law enforcement and other counties that are having the same discussion with their various LE and commissioners and everybody else that have to figure out a way to work together on all of this. I spent a good, 3 hours with the sheriff's office last Thursday, and we worked through a great deal of issues, not that it's resolved necessarily. Some of them, we're just gonna say, we're waiting for litigation. The courts will have to weigh in on interpreting 217 and all of its fallout. But mainly, what concerns you, I think, right now, is this notion of indemnification. We chatted a little bit about it last Thursday, I think. But I think the best course a way to proceed would be for me to schedule an executive session with you and just talk about indemnity of law enforcement officials. There's so much more to the law, but I don't want to cloud that conversation and go down rabbit holes concerning body cams and everything else that's encompassed within 217. Just focus in on that indemnity discussion. And I'm thinking, I'd be hopeful that 30 minutes would suffice, but I think I better ask for an hour to flesh through it all, again, just where indemnity is concerned. I do have an understanding of what I think the sheriff believes to be appropriate. I've received information from, thank you, received information from so far just Weld County about what they're doing with it all, which I thought was very, very interesting. We also have to figure out how to do enact anything that we decide to do. But I'll leave the rest of that discussion for an executive session, which I think is appropriate. Garrett was okay with me doing that with you all first, and then have a second meeting, public meeting, that includes the sheriff to talk about the way forward. I know initially his email said, in caps, urgent, but that's, I think we're dealing with it in an appropriate time frame.
So a couple of questions I have, Eric. So when did 217 go into effect? Was it in effect now? So was it, or is it sick, so in that thing, then I have to laugh a little bit. So Weld County's gonna do what? They're just gonna forget it ever happened or pretend it didn't happen?
Send you a letter. Essentially, it was a letter from the commissioners to the sheriff's office that said they ignored the portion that talked about the good faith analysis, meaning the end result was that Weld County would protect the officers from the $25,000 claim. They would not protect officers if they were convicted of a crime. And we'll run through all of that when we get to talk. To answer your question about timing, all of the above is the answer. There are portions of 217 that are in effect now. Of course, the way these bills work, they directly amend or create new statutes. So some of those statutes are already in effect upon governor's signature. Others are in effect between now and September. Then there's a bunch of other statutes that go into effect September 1. And then the last trigger date, as I recall, was in 2023. Those mainly had to do with mandatory body cams and those kinds of things. A lot to it. But again, I think what's in front of us right now, we'll talk about and parse this out so that we can focus on this one indemnity issue first and foremost. And that completes my list. I did want to, I guess I'll throw this in there. Looks like we have environmental health at 11, but Gary Peterson created a RAS, which you all reviewed, I think, that dealt with Storm Mountain Ranch and the split, if you will, of several 70-acre parcels into 35-acre parcels. Originally, the way the ranch was created, was through subdivision exemption. And there's a plat of record that still shows those 70-acre parcels, although they were deeded after that to create these split 35s. And that was their way of getting more flexibility for secondary dwelling units on those large parcels. And everybody knew about what was going on and nobody objected, but now planning is objecting to that and they want to force Storm Mountain Ranch to either rejoin those parcels, which if they did that, then their secondary dwelling units would be in violation of our regulations. Or what I had suggested was to ask them, not tell them, ask them to re-record that subdivision exemption plat that recognizes those deeds and the 35s that were created by those deeds as a better form of solution. I think Gary's behind that. He's one of the phone calls I just got a few minutes ago. So just an interesting way of trying to correct history when we knew exactly what they were doing when they were doing it. I mentioned it to Merrill the other day and he just laughed and said, yeah, of course we knew what they were doing. That's all, I promise. I'm done with my list.
Eric, I have a question. And I have to confess to having a poor memory or just general ignorance. But on our public health order, which relies upon attachment A, and attachment A is the mitigation protocol that each business is required to fill out. I have this recollection that somewhere along the line, we actually established some parameters based upon square footage of businesses. Is that correct?
I don't think so. There was talk in the construction arena about square footage and allowing a certain number of employees based on the square footage of the project, and then it got a little turned when there was a request about, well, what about employees that are working outside? Does that really apply to them? And that sort of thing. I'm trying to click quickly to the appendix A. Not getting there fast enough, but I don't remember anything dealing with square footage. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I was contacted by someone that runs a fairly large business here in town that has been diligently observing the mathematics around how many customers they could have in their store at a time. And they were operating under the assumption that there was the square footage of the entire building divided by square footage per person, then they arrived at a limit of how many people they could have in the store.
So the mitigation protocol does ask you to ask the business to identify the gross square footage of open space and then approximate gross square footage of space total. But I'm very familiar with what you're talking about. City Market on Thursday or Friday, my son was telling me they exceeded their limits and they actually had a line going out the door at that point. But I think that's self-imposed as a matter of Kroger policy rather than our public health order.
Okay. Well, then, I think that gives me enough direction to return the phone call.
Okay.
There is in there, there's a section under measures to prevent crowds from gathering. There's a spot that says limit the number of customers in the facility at any one time to, and then there's a blank. And then it says, which allows for customers and employees to easily maintain at least 6 foot distance from one another at all practicable times, but there's no actual specific requirement for how that's calculated.
Yeah, so you're confirming what I read. I just wanted to make sure that there, myself, I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something that I was missing. So just to give you an idea of what these guys are looking at, I didn't mind. They're allocating about 246 square feet per person, which sounds like a lot.
Well, I guess this does amount to a square footage limitation, the section that Beth was just reading, and it goes on to say, post an employee at the door to ensure that the maximum number of customers set forth above is not exceeded. How else would you do that short of a square footage calculation?
But it allows them to determine what's appropriate in order to maintain 6 feet of distance. And it probably would vary based on the nature of the business, right? I mean, if when people are in, they're standing in line, they probably only need 6 feet per person versus if they're wandering around, they need a little bit more of a bubble around themselves, I guess would just be my thought.
There's areas where customers can't go, is employees only, is that used in the calculation, et cetera? And I, now that I'm saying it, I kind of recall us talking about that and trying to keep it simpler and in the business's hands to control that as long as the distancing was met. Looks like Linnea may have something to add. I see her on screen. She
it probably just keeps it open so that any sort of reasonable justification they can make about how they calculated that number of people allowed in the store could be allowed, right? As long as it was reasonable.
Yep. Okay. I think I can respond to this individual and just continue to point them back to our public health order and the mitigation protocol. And as long as they're comfortable that they've achieved the necessary amount of square footage allocated to each individual that ensures 6 foot social distancing, that that's what they should do. Thank you, Eric. Do we have anything else for Eric today?
I guess, Eric, I have a question. Are we going to talk about that Storm Mountain thing, or that was our update? Or, and again, I'm just, is planning trying to figure out, you know, we're getting even or something here with them or whatever for playing the game with us? Or I don't know. And I'm just, that's not my style, but so a question.
No. Overall, keep in mind that this is all subject to exemption. So they're not subject to our regulations. There's very little that we can force them to do. Now, like I said, there's a subdivision exemption plat on record that shows those 70-acre parcels rather than them being split into 35s, which they are now, pursuant to the deeds that were also recorded. So it's just a matter of cleanup. And I think the best approach is to contact those property owners or probably the ranch manager and ask nicely, hey, I think it's in your best interest to have a clean title, chain of title, and clean record of what's actually going on the ground.
No, that sounds great, Eric. It's like, don't need to play games. They don't need to play games with us either. So, you know, let's do the right thing. And, you know, it's their boat, so they need to figure out how to sail it, and they need to make sure they got it ready to go. So, yeah. Thank you.
Anything else for Eric? Okay, while we're killing time, we need to kill a little bit of time here before we move on to Scott's presentation.
I do have a couple things that are probably more for Mark than for Eric.
Okay, well, let me get mine out of the way before I forget it. So on Thursday, I'm not sure what our agenda looks like on Thursday, but I need to make sure that I can leave no later than 12 noon to go to the Yampa Valley Housing Authority board meeting. So for that, I guess for Deanna and for Kendra, hopefully we'll be done by noon, but if not, I think I'll be leaving at noon.
I think, Tim, the only thing is, wasn't that the day we are scheduled to meet with Larry Gilley?
Oh, for Christ's sake. Kendra? Or Deanna, what have we scheduled for Larry Gilley on Thursday? Well, if necessary, I'll miss another Housing Authority meeting. It won't be the end of the world.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to get through all those videos by Thursday, so I wouldn't be too sad if we pushed it back to next week.
Yeah, I'm all right with it, too. I haven't even started them either, man.
So, no, yeah. And I was doing the calculation. I'm going to need to watch about 4 hours of them a day to get them done by Thursday.
I spent 3 hours yesterday afternoon, and I got through three more. I'm averaging an hour per applicant of time to look through their resumes and their letters, and then watch the videos and make notes. So maybe we should push it back. I don't think we want to rush through this. I mean, I think, and I was a little concerned about that too, if I was gonna be able to, I've got 9 more to do or 8 more to do. So if I was really gonna have 8 hours of quality time between now and Thursday is questionable. So I would, as much as I think we need to move forward on this, I think maybe it would be a good idea to push it off until next week.
Right now, it's scheduled from 9:30 to 10:30, but we can push it if you guys would like.
I think next week would be great.
Yeah, Deanna, why don't you contact Larry Gilley? Let him know that we're struggling a little bit with finding enough time to do a good job of reviewing all 12 of these semifinalists, and we would prefer to wait till next week and find a day that's convenient for him. Obviously, probably not on a Wednesday. And I do think, it sounds like you'd only blocked out 1 hour as it was on Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah, 1 hour is not going to get it, I don't think.
That's what I was wondering. Did Larry indicate that he thought an hour was enough? It seems like more would be needed. It might be best to just schedule it at the end of a meeting so that if we need a little longer.
Yeah, I could see starting at 1 p.m. And blocking it out from 1 p.m. till 4 p.m. And if we get done sooner than that, that would be okay.
Okay, I'll work with them.
I will say that I do like that format of looking at the videos. That's pretty helpful rather than just trying to rely what's on a piece of paper. So
can't wait to get started.
I mean, I'm you know, it does seem like a lot of work necessary on our part, but on the other hand, I guess if it's a big deal that we're going to figure out who's going to lead the organization for hopefully a number of years, we should be willing to invest that time.
Yeah, it's a big deal for them too to, you know, go through a work effort. So, you know, we appreciate it. So, and it kind of shows what effort, and, you know, so I think it's all good. So we've picked our finalists if we're wasting time here right now.
River
so
District?
For the Upper Yampa Water Conservancy.
Oh, Upper Yampa.
So Andy Rossi, our current, he's the engineer, and then he's the interim manager. So he's one of the finalists. Kelly Romero Heaney is the second finalist, and so good for her.
Yeah.
And then our third one was a guy named Doug Robothan, and he's actually been a staff member of Ken Salazar's, and he's been around in the DNR world for a bunch, and he just bought a house in Rock County as well. So he's moving to South. He's moving up to South Route. So he's got a house up there. So, or get ready to build up there. So, but anyhow, we're having our final interviews on the 15th and going to be announcing somebody on the 16th. So we're pretty excited about the three of them. It was a pretty interesting concept, even covered from seven semifinalists to come down with three. I was hoping more to the two for the finalists, but I wasn't able to do that. And I think I told you last week, the differential between the people's views was quite broad, to say the least. Yeah, we're good to go.
Well, you know, the bottom line, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, we all have our subjective ways of looking at people that and different people's styles. And I think that these videos that I've viewed so far, you made the point some time ago, Doug, that eventually we probably really do need to get to in-person, face-to-face interviews with people, because, you know, you have to have a level of comfort with whoever the individual is that you hire, and trying to get that via video and resume is pretty hard. Hey, I got to go answer the door. I'll be right back.
So did you go on the parade then, Beth?
Yeah, it was fun. I thought they did a great job, actually. Tim brought the donkey over. The donkey is fully repaired after the, you knew there was a mouse incident and a horse. The horse, and then there were mice inside. The donkey was in great shape, but I thought it went really well. And people, at least where I was in the parade route, people were spread out. You know, I didn't see a lot of gathering going on, which was really reassuring. It was really nice. The Casey's Pond residents came outside and sat on the sidewalk to watch, which was really touching, I thought, and very nice to see them out. And I heard lots of people say they liked it better than the downtown, crowded, hot, you know, crazy. So I thought it was fun. It went well.
I always wondered when you, when the parade for the 4th of July, especially in Steamboat, you do it for. Do you do it for the locals, or you do it for the people that come in and fill the timers and the condos and the rest? And so,
right.
Yeah, I'm sure it was probably pretty nice to drive
through. Yeah, this was a nice long route. I mean, we went up and around over on the mountain and then came up kind of past my house on Hilltop. And then we went out to West End Village, and then that's where it ended, at West End Village. It was nice. It was good. I only saw two thumbs downs for the Democrats. So that seems like a good ratio.
I think you're doing good. That's
what I mean,
good.
Two is not, that's nothing. That's nothing. So, And one set were definitely tourists. I didn't know about the other ones, but just based on where they were clearly tourists.
I did just send all of you, I forwarded from Carrie what's labeled as travel guidance. It's a Word document.
Thanks, Eric.
Hey, Tim, I just sent this group a document from Carrie Ladrow called Travel Guidance.
Yep, I see it.
That's to that issue we were discussing earlier. Scrolling down to the bottom, it looks like, oh, I'm not sure we're prepared to talk about it. I had suggested earlier we wait until the COVID discussion, so.
That's fine. We'll wait till then.
Because then we can glance at it. I did have a couple things. May I?
No. Sure. I have one more thing, but it's, let me just get mine.
No, you can go ahead. That's fine.
Let me get mine out of the way. It's just a piece of news. I talked to Megan Kemp Moore.
Moore Kemp.
Huh?
You said her last name backwards, but it's okay.
Oh, okay. It's Kemp Moore. I'm sorry.
It's Moore Kemp.
It's Moore. I'm sorry. Moore Kemp. Whatever. The protest or the application to exclude certain census blocks from the upcoming FCC auction that was made by Zirkle Wireless. The good news is that that appeal to exclude those census blocks was rejected by the FCC. And so now Luminet or any other provider that wants to bid on providing services to those census blocks can now move forward. So that's actually very good news, I think. That's all I have.
I wanted to, Tim, on Friday, we talked with Mo a little bit about the concept of a grants administrator, and we were wanting to bring that up, I think, with Mark and with Doug a little bit today, since neither of them were here. So I don't know, do you want to summarize that or do you want me to try to?
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'll try my best. You let me know how I do. So we just, you know, early on we had talked about the concept of like a consultant to help us navigate all these funding streams. And with Mo, we just talked a little more about that concept, especially as we're adding things like the Protect Our Neighbors money, which is a little bit looks a little bit more like a grant, right? Rather than kind of reimbursement, at least we think it will. And then we just talked more broadly about the concept of a grants administrator for Rout County. We just suspect there probably is money out there, whether specific to COVID or more broadly, that we're not tapping into because we don't have someone kind of coordinating those efforts and doing that work. And so we just talked about the concept and asked Mo if he thought something like that would be valuable. He indicated he definitely believed so, both for COVID and more broadly. And then we also just talked about that generally when you have a position like that, that person is expected to pay their own way, essentially, you know, to write enough grants to cover their own salary. And so we just wanted to bring that conversation to you, Mark, and to Doug about whether that's something we should be considering, both in the short term to help support with COVID efforts, but then maybe also longer term as well. Tim, I don't know if you want to add anything to what I said or change anything I said.
No, I mean, other than I think we've been always kind of reticent to get involved in hiring an individual or a consultant to write grants, but I guess from my perspective, it feels like the situation is a little bit different now, and I don't know if we think this would be a good idea in the short term or in the long term, but I think you put it pretty well. I think it's just something we need to talk about.
So I don't know if there's anything else to say except maybe to let Doug weigh in on the concept and maybe ask Mark if he has thoughts on it. But I think the other benefit is potentially freeing up some staff time within some of our departments where we have everybody writing their own grants. And so there may be some opportunity to consolidate some of those efforts. And again, I'm not 100% sold, just wanted to open up the conversation. I don't know if Doug's still there. Doug, are you there with comments? I imagine if he was, he would weigh in. There
you go. Well, yeah, sorry, I wasn't listening. I'm trying to get my son out haying here for a minute. So, and an emergency too. It was nice cutting this morning at 6:30, though. I'll tell you that, though. The mosquitoes aren't bad at 6:30 in the morning cutting hay. So
they still haven't sprayed them yet, huh? That's what I thought I saw. They still need FAA approval.
Well, I'm over on the side of halfway on the side of Sleeping Giant right now. So we're remotely haying right now. So,
well, I can just re-summarize, Doug, which is we were talking about the concept of a grants administrator and specifically for thinking about COVID right now in terms of navigating the funding streams, especially maybe those that we're not tapping into. And it really came up as we started looking at Protect Our Neighbors. There's money available that's going to look a little bit more like an actual grant, you know, rather than just a reimbursement. But then we just also talked about conceptually, is there some benefit in the long term? And Tim and I had this discussion on Friday with Mo a little bit, and we wanted to involve you and Mark in the conversation about whether there might be a benefit to Route County of a position like that, short-term, long-term, or both.
Yeah, so you're talking about a Winnie Della Quadri coming.
That's what we're talking about, yep.
Yeah. And again, you know, I've steered away from that just because it looked like a beggar, and the city's got a fine reputation out there of being making sure that they're at every table, so I don't know if I really need to go there. But, you know, again, I think we have a huge conversation about after we get the new county manager on track, on board and whatever, is what our structure looks like. Because, you know, Robin's done a great job for us too. And short of having a assistant county manager and the rest as the long-term fills out, moves along. So I don't know, something like that and something, you know, some administrator or some, you know, grants administrator, then also a PR person or whatever, fits into my bailiwick a lot more than having the assistant county manager. We moved into the assistant county manager because we had 13 reports to the county manager. If you think about it, well, I don't know. So I don't think it was that much of a problem either. Before we hired the assistant county manager. So I think we have a huge discussion, and I'm not sure how that wants to happen and when that wants to happen. But I do think, you know, in the short term, maybe, you know, that sounds all good, whatever. I am worried about and the other thing, building the castle out of grant monies and the rest has never been my appetite either. So it's kind of been, I like making sure we can depend on what we have. And it's great right now. We have COVID money, and, you know, in the past we had DOLA money. Now we don't have any DOLA money. So, you know, and there's no severance tax and the rest of all those going to hell. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm into the discussion. So if we had some short-term conversation about all that, I would appreciate that and see how it works out. So
yeah, and I don't think we have to know. We just definitely wanted to open up the conversation about the concept and kind of have talk about it a little bit.
So Doug, while you were gone, I kind of made the comment that I've always been a little queasy about the concept of hiring someone to just run around chasing grants. And I agree with you. Sometimes it feels a little bit icky, but in the current environment, with so much federal money sloshing around out there, it feels like a little bit of malpractice if we are not availing ourselves of every opportunity to garner some of that money. And then I also think about especially over the last 6 or 8 months, I've really felt guilty. I've seen some of these emails come through about grant opportunities for broadband funds. And then we also have, I know Senator Bennett just recently introduced a pretty significant bill called the Bridge Act, which I think had something like $30 billion of funds that would be available for broadband grants. And I haven't even had the time to figure out whether or not governmental entities would be eligible for that, or what role we might be able to play in pursuing some of those kinds of funds. And so that's the kind of thing that leads me to believe that at least in the short term, this might not be such a bad idea.
And I had two things I said while you weren't here, Doug, that I'll just reiterate. And then I see Mark and Eric both want to weigh in. The first was that I think, you know, there's generally an expectation that this kind of position pays for itself. And in terms of identifying additional funding for the county. And then I think the second is, we know that we have a lot of departments that are spending time doing their own kind of grant writing and application processes. And so there could be a real benefit to freeing up some of their time to not have to do this and identifying additional revenues for them. So just a couple of other potential benefits if we thought this was something that made sense.
Commissioners, I think this is a really important conversation, and I'm glad to know that you've introduced it and that you're giving this some serious consideration. One thing that you may think about is that would this individual maybe wear a couple different hats? And let me just throw out one possible suggestion. You've seen the value of having that public information office and have that person available that has done a really exceptional job of communicating everything that's important coming out from your offices and your initiatives going forward. There's every possibility that that's a position that also could encompass your grant writing, because typically if you've got somebody with those really excellent communication skills, a lot of times that's exactly the same skill set you're looking for in terms of a good grant writer. I mean, it's got to be somebody that, you know, has exceptional communication skills. But I think that you've got maybe an opportunity that those two particular functions could be combined, and then you could get, I think, some inherent value from both of those going forward. So food for thought.
All right. Well, we've kicked off that discussion. I guess my question to you, Mark, would be, I think what we're hearing from the commissioners is that this is worth at least some further exploration. And I don't think we want to explore it for the next 3 or 4 months if we either need to do something or not do something. So do you have any suggestions for us, Mark, how to move this conversation forward?
Absolutely, commissioners. I can ask Kathy and the HR department, let's go ahead and begin to canvas and see what we've got available to us in terms of job descriptions and exactly where that would slot in terms of a title, the requisite job description, some of the skills we'd be looking for. And with that, we can see if there's an opportunity that this person is going to be multifaceted and maybe take on a number of different roles. So we'll have that conversation right away, and happy to bring back some information to the commissioners.
I think just a couple comments. I think it would be good to just keep the door open for us to evaluate a few different possibilities. To Doug's point about the assistant or the deputy county manager, we had really been committed to our new county manager kind of being able to do the put in place a structure that that person thought made the most sense. So I wouldn't want to go down a path where we're predetermining that before that person comes in, if we think it would sort of supersede that person doing that. And so it does make me wonder if we should also be looking at some kind of contract or temporary, like for the short term, and maybe just looking at all the different, a few different possible options about what would make the most sense, both for short term and long term, rather than assuming we're going to be prepared to create a new position. I think we have to be really thoughtful about that, even just from an optics standpoint, when we're in the middle of a hiring freeze. You know, we need to really be thoughtful about how we're framing and structuring something that would be.
As we go ahead and we glean information about a position of this nature, one of the things we'll certainly ask the question as we canvass, we'll say, do you have somebody like this with you, within your organization? And are they either a full-time employee, a part-time employee, or are they contract or some kind of a hybrid thereof? But we'll certainly get that information as well. And I don't want to steal the thunder. I know Eric had his hand up a few minutes ago, and I don't want to overrun any comments he wants to make.
So a couple things. I'll remind you, we do have a grant review committee right now that's made up of the county manager, myself, and the finance director. And you could potentially free up some time for all of us by having a full-time or part-time grant administrator. The other concern that I always have with grants is the management of those, and in particular, reporting requirements. We've let that go to a large degree. The last one I remember that we needed to clean up was the North Route preschool. And we ended up having to just clean up, make sure that they met all the reporting requirements, which I frankly don't think they did. But having some a management aspect involved sure would be nice.
Thank you.
So I guess the other comment, so they'd be collaboratively working out of one department. And again, going back to Mark's comment, so who do they respond to and who do they work for? Are they, and in the governance manual, so they work for the county manager and another department or something. So just so we keep that in mind as well. So unless they work for us, the county commissioners, and we have three employees, we have county manager, county attorney, and the grant writer. So
we don't have time for any more employees, Doug. These two guys are plenty of work for us.
All right. Well, I feel like we've given Mark enough direction that he can start working on this and maybe report back to us in a week and let us know what he's learned, and we can make a plan going forward or not, as the case may be.
Yeah. So again, I'm a never say never. So I've learned hard the way never to, I learned hard not to say never. So I'm totally open and I'm adaptable and can be trained, and we go from there. So
I've not heard the same thing from your wife, but maybe in the public sphere you are, so that'd be great. Okay. I think that was a good discussion. I think we're ready to move on to our discussion with our environmental health director, Scott Kalman, about some on-site wastewater treatment systems variance process.
That's correct. Thanks, Commissioner. It feels nice sort of talking about some normal business, I have to admit. So really what we're here to do today is to talk about this variance procedure. And see whether it's something that the Board of Health or Board of County Commissioners wants me to pursue for adoption. And what I did in the agenda communication form is provided a couple of examples. And I also provided that part of Regulation 43 for on-site wastewater treatment systems that talks about variances specifically. Did you guys get a chance to look at that? I know it's not exciting reading. It wasn't super long. I kind of see the pros and cons. I'm not exactly sure why we never adopted a variance process in the past. It may be because of administrative burden and potential increase in these types of requests, because there is quite a bit of extra work if we were to adopt this process. However, I think that there's probably some situations out there where it's appropriate and people are fulfilling these requirements, and maybe it's a land rights issue in some cases. The other piece that I do like about it is being able, even if we did not have variance procedures for new systems, possibly a variance procedure for repairs. And I think that in the past, we've just kind of dealt with this informally. And it doesn't come up very often. And I think that if you look at the requirements for a variance, we will see that, it's probably a pretty rare situation where they fulfill all these requirements. I've given you a couple of examples. One is in Hans Peak Village. Basically, as the regulations stand today, we can't approve this type of permit. Another example I gave was the vaults out at the landfill. And reading the regulations for variances and the requirements, they have two vaults out there. One of those vaults, I don't think meets the requirements. And that would be the one at their office and scale house. The reason that it wouldn't meet the variance requirements is that there's room and perfectly in the capability, I guess, to build an on-site wastewater treatment system. In fact, they applied for an on-site wastewater treatment system and that application was approved, but they never put in the system. The other vault is at the shop, and I'm not sure if you could have an on-site wastewater treatment system there because of the location and ground conditions. And so I would need to review it further, but that might be a case where we would allow a variance. So I don't know if you guys have questions about the regulations or any thoughts, or you need some explanation from me. Really what we're trying to do here, like I said, is decide whether we want to pursue adopting this process or not. And honestly, I wish I could say I had a recommendation, but I'm sort of on the fence on this one just because of the administrative burden versus those rare situations where it might be appropriate to give a variance.
So I guess maybe I don't understand, and I definitely don't understand enough about septic systems and all this inspection process and whatever. A variance for what? Like that they wouldn't have to meet all the rules, that they wouldn't have to go through the same process. I guess I just don't fully understand what the variance is varying from.
Right. And so in this case, and that's why I provided a couple of examples, let's talk about Hans Peak. Right now, that system doesn't comply with Reg 43 because it can't meet the setback requirements for the property line. And so if we had a variance process, they may come in and document why they should qualify for a variance. In this case, it's a property line. That property line is on the right of way. So can they prove that there's no injury as a result of not being able to meet that requirement?
So I have a question, Scott.
It's a variance from the requirements. It's not a variance on the process.
That's correct. And they still have to meet all the requirements. There's a whole list. It's on page 25, a whole list of requirements that they would have to meet. And, one of the reasons or one of the arguments possibly against adopting this process is, most of the time you can go through this list on page 25 and say, well, even if we had a variance process, you wouldn't qualify for these reasons. But there are rare cases where, they would meet these requirements. And so that's why I'm here is really to see if this is something that we want to pursue.
So, you know, Scott, the obvious concern is that I don't think I'm interested in setting up a system whereby lots of individual property owners could start getting vaults that we would not otherwise want to see happen out there, or that we start going down the path of the, what are they called, the engineered treatment systems, you know, some of them
advanced,
using propane to burn the waste, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we've relied pretty strongly on our rules as they exist now. You have to have the 5 acres. You've got to be able to install an engineered, the traditional septic system. So I understand these two particular cases kind of make sense, maybe, kind of, sort of, but I guess I worry about the slippery slope.
I would agree.
So there is a requirement in here, though, that says no variance shall be issued where the property can accommodate a conforming OWTS, which seems like a pretty narrow window of where it would even be possible.
Maybe. So I'm aware of the history of this and having multiple discussions with Mike Zoft when Reg 43 first came about and we changed from ISDS to OWTS regulation. And the rationale behind not adopting a variance process was for all of the reasons that you all have already outlined, the staffing required, the fact that the county didn't want to have more vault-like situations out in the county. But also, if you have to have expertise involved in this. You have an applicant that comes in and says, we can't meet the regulations, and therefore we want to go through this variance process. You got to have an evaluation ability to analyze that and whether that's in fact true. Are we going to next hire engineers so that we can evaluate these applications? And finally, the slippery slope was a very, very large consideration for Mike back in the day.
So would this, I mean, the obvious example of the slippery slope or the concern where things might really become a problem would be with all of these small lots up in Stagecoach, say, for instance, or at Steamboat Lake. But they wouldn't be able to apply for this variance because they would still be required to have the 5 acres no matter what, correct?
That's correct, and that's a planning regulation. So. That shouldn't be a consideration in this case because of that planning regulation.
And in this case, the lot in Hans Peak Village, this person's running into this problem because they need to replace an older, outdated vault. And so they're kind of screwed if they don't have a way to do that, correct?
That's correct. And so I'm glad you brought that up because really, you know, even though this system doesn't meet setback requirements, it is replacing a vault that was installed back in the 50s or 60s.
So why isn't that just grandfathered and they get to go ahead and replace their vault?
Well, I didn't see that we could do that unless we had a variance process. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe that's a question for Eric is, you know, we're going from a vault that was installed prior to regulations to a more traditional septic system. It's not meeting the setback requirements, but it probably is, you know, maybe they could be granted that system under the grandfathered vault. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I misunderstood. So the folks in Hans Peak Village are looking to install a traditional septic system, not just replace the vault.
Both. Get rid of the old vault and put in a traditional system.
So
they can't meet current.
They would certainly be able to simply replace their vault without going through any kind of a variance.
Yeah.
Correct?
Not necessarily. No. Typically, when the project involves full replacement, the grant grandfathering, there are no provisions in that regard, but it's not available. They have to replace with a currently acceptable and regulated system.
So that's the thing, is there's these situations that come up every once in a while where it kind of puts us in a tough spot.
They are one-offs, and I think we can treat them on a case-by-case basis. I do recall a conversation that involved the board when Reg 43 came about, and this was one of the considerations, but nobody at that time knew of any one-offs to even provide an example of that. Maybe this is one of them, but probably not if they want to replace with a traditional system. Sort of side note I'd make here, in that discussion, we talked about wanting to encourage communities like, especially Hans Peak Village, where they have these incredibly terrible water systems. They're not even systems, really. When you look at it from a community perspective, they all have their individual wells and whatnot, but trying to encourage these communities to band together to do something that serves the broader public rather than just individuals here and there.
Well, I mean, speaking of the slippery slope in Hans Peak Village, I mean, that feels like an area where there's the potential for multiple property owners to come forward and wanting and needing to do something with their existing substandard septic systems, right?
There's a history of that too that Scott's aware of, where attempts have been made to get that community together to talk about a water treatment system. There was land that was going to be donated by the state, I think it was. I think it was CPW, it wasn't the land board, that was willing to provide the land, but the neighbors just could not get along well enough together. Typical North Route, which is why I live there, get together to do anything of value for the group.
So I guess great discussion here. I just want to make sure we keep in mind our objectives. Our objectives are clean water, clean environment, and the rest. And, you know, I don't mind having a variance, but when I start having variances come in because of laziness, bad management, or dollars, you know, I have a big problem with that. And, you know, and then I'm with Commissioner Corrigan, I'm not interested in having a variance so we can change the zoning so that we can have more units or whatever on a particular thing. And yeah, I know we've had the conversation about Stagecoach and the rest, and you know, and again, we've all had this conversation about the scientific septic systems as well, and their monitoring of those, and who's responsible, and who's going to be sure that they're doing the diligence that they're supposed to be doing. So the engineered systems as well. So, you know, I'm not opposed to this, but I guess we have to think about the double negative sometimes of what. So yeah, we have two problems that we're trying to maybe fix, create an environment, and even the one lesson his at the landfill. I mean, you know, really. So we just did something illegal and put in a system that wasn't what he said he was going to put in the first place. It's just like, gosh, I don't know. What do you say about that? So sounds like me. So,
do I understand correctly from reading this, Scott, that this basically creates something that looks a little bit like a planning process where people could come to the Board of Health and request a variance? Is that, and we would evaluate it as the Board of Health?
So I based on my understanding, the local Board of Health will determine what type of variances will require public hearings. And so,
but then the public hearing would be conducted by the Board of Health, I would assume?
That's correct.
Okay. That's kind of what I'm, yep. Okay. So obviously we would write the regulations, but then we would also be responsible for hearing these requests.
So well, you kind of implies that there may be would never have the authority to under this to grant a variance under your own authority, that it would have to come to the Board of Health?
The way I read it is the Board of Health determines what type of variance will require a public hearing. So it seems like
there could be some administrative approval.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an upfront decision. When the county adopted Reg 43, which it was required to do, it had the ability, and I think the annual ability to establish the variance process. So that's really what's at question here. Does the Board of Health want to establish a variance process? And Mike Zoff's position had always been no, but he didn't deal with Reg 43 for very long before he retired, because it's not, I mean, I've been here 10 years, so it's no older than 10 years.
Yeah, it was 2014.
My main question is, do we think that we could write these regulations in a way that would sufficiently address both I guess a few things. One, that it would be used very rarely. I mean, you're talking about, you have a couple of examples here where it might be appropriate. Are we to expect that this open, I mean, could we write it in a way where it doesn't open the door to a huge number more, that it really would be used for just these kind of limited situations that really are exceptional? And then also, you know, do we think it's possible to write these regulations in a way that it's pretty narrow? I guess that's the question.
So you know, I think that the way that the regs are written in Regulation 43 does make it pretty narrow already, because they are very specific about no variant shall be allowed solely for economic gain, you know, where they can have a conforming OWTS. I think there's a lot of that in there, but we also have the ability to be a little bit more stringent. And so I think that we could further, you know, narrow that window by identifying some other criteria.
It seems to me that if we thought it made sense to go down this road, which I don't know for sure, but ideally it would be like less like planning and more like BOA, where like here's your list and you meet it or you don't, period. And I guess also Eric had brought up the question of, are we gonna need to employ professional expertise to evaluate some of these? And I would want to make sure we know the answer to that question.
Well, so what the requirements say is there needs to be included with the application technical justification by a professional engineer or professional geologist. And so that would basically be a stamped report. And so, you know, they would provide that technical justification and it's stamped. So really, they're putting their professional stamp on it, and that's kind of on them.
Well, 2 points. Scott, do you know any engineers out there that you don't exactly trust with these water systems?
I think they do a pretty good job in general, but some are a little better than others.
In general. That was me being facetious more than anything, although I certainly know they exist. It's more, as I recall it, Beth, it's more or less an on-off switch. You decide to adopt a variance process or you do not. And then I don't remember the evaluation, but it's at least at first, it's an on-off switch.
And it does say the local Board of Health has the authority to impose site-specific requirements and condition on any variance. And like I said before, there could be some more stringent requirements.
You know, it would feel really crappy if we had a situation where, for instance, in Hans Peak Village, there's an individual that has, they're living in their house. They have been living there for some time, you know, decades, and they have a system that is no longer functional. And we would have in our bureaucracy, we would actually say to that person, too bad, so sad, we're not even going to allow you to fix your septic system, whether it's a vault, whether it's something else. That feels pretty crummy. And it does feel like there ought to be a process to address those kinds of issues.
Well, and it seems like in this particular situation, we could allow them to replace their vault.
But even Eric pointed out, maybe not necessarily so.
So the other question I'd have is whether we would need to do this countywide or whether we could pick out the old town, you know, Hans Peak, and just pick out that area and have the variance. And again, I don't know that we need to have variances across the whole county. I mean, I'm sorry, if you got 35 acres, you ought to be able to figure out a system. The rest of the problem is down in Stagecoach, where we have the 5 acre, or, you know, the 5 acre, or in Steamboat Lake subdivisions as well, that you need. And I don't know that we wanted, again, that's what I was trying not to do, so that we change the zoning ability in those houses and the reduction in size from small lots that were created in the early 70s. So, it's something we might think about too, is not maybe having a very, I don't know. We're just having a discussion.
Yeah, and Commissioner Corrigan makes a good point, is that, you know, we do want to point towards promoting, public utility in Hans Peak rather than allowing people to continue to squeeze systems in a small area, that we would like to see a wastewater treatment system in that area eventually.
Well, that's easy for us to say. Do we have the $2-4 million or whatever it would take to encourage that?
No.
Yeah, that's been the same conversation for 30 years, is find me the money. Yeah. So, and actually we went down that path and tried to help them find some money, and then it was kind of like, sometimes it's on the irrigation ditch. It says, well, you get two people that are on board with it, and then, well, the rest of the, you know, I don't want to change anything, and you're going to make me join the sewer system. No, I don't want to do that. I'm just fine the way we are.
So where do we go with this conversation, guys?
Well, I think I tend to agree with Tim that it really would be a shame to just tell people, you know, this Hans Peak example feels like a good one. But I guess back to my previous point, could this be narrow enough that it's really only these kinds of things? I mean, I'm not particularly interested in creating a variance process where somebody can do something illegal and then come back and say, hey, can you just give me a variance for the illegal thing I did? I mean, that seems really problematic to me.
But we've been doing that for years around here, Beth.
I know, Tim, I've learned. But I don't know. You don't want to create a mess for future boards to have to deal with. So I don't know.
Maybe we've given Scott enough direction. I mean, I think that there's going to be these rare circumstances, hopefully rare, where people really have a legitimate problem that they should not be prevented from at least trying to fix. So your comments, Beth, around trying to write this in a really narrow manner, maybe Scott could come back to us in a couple of weeks and say, hey, I've come up with some language that really does narrow this down to very rare circumstances, and we could consider that.
So since we don't have a sounding board for this as well, do we run, you know, the potential to run in this by a planning commission too, just to have their weigh in on it as well? So maybe not. So I just throw it out, conversation. It isn't the planning matter, and it isn't the land, maybe might be a land use matter, but I think the planning, and maybe Eric could weigh in a little bit on that too, but I think I trust the outreach and the ability of planning to be a sounding board for us as a little bit as well. So I'd leave that there.
Well, and we'd have to have a public hearing for adopting new regulations, right? If we go down this path.
Yes. And I think that, you know, we would probably talk about a fee. And I'm not sure what that would look like, but that could potentially narrow who would apply, depending on what that fee is. And then I guess I would just develop some type of form that included all of these requirements, and then any other requirements that we deem necessary. So I could come back in 2 or 3 weeks with some of that information.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea, Scott. I'm not sure we're ready for you to come back to us with a fully formed new set of regulations. I think a little more conversation in a week or two after you, maybe you can come back with some ideas and some suggested language before we give you fuller direction to move forward.
Yeah, and yeah. I agree with Tim, like if you could maybe work, have conversation with legal and just figure out how narrowly we could write these rules and have them still be, you know, of use for these, again, these situations where we think it's really necessary. I think that's the piece of point of understanding I need.
And I'll also talk to Chuck Cousineau at the state about it and see what our options are with this system in particular. And I think there's other counties that have adopted this variance process. So probably be worth talking to some of my colleagues about that also.
I feel like we're in agreement that there should be some kind of variance process for some really unique situations, that we shouldn't be in the place where, you know, like I said before, so sad, too bad, you're just out of luck.
So the other thing I just want to think about here too, and keep it on our radar screen, is if we have to get engineering help in to review the engineer's stuff, that should be on the nickel of the person providing the variance request. So I would want to make that sure, Scott, that if we did something like this, that if we had to have an independent person working for us to review the integrity of the engineer's documentation, that would be a contract that we would have with the owner to review the engineer's documentation if we didn't.
You know, I'm thinking this feels a lot like our, or a little bit like our process with oil and gas developers when we're looking at taking care of a county road.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Well, and I do want to just make sure we really feel like this whole process is justified. I wouldn't want to write whole new regulations just for this one guy in Hans Peak to be able to put a septic system in. I mean, we definitely should be mindful of the broader picture than just this one situation.
Okay, well, I feel like I got the direction that I needed. Is there any other comments or ideas?
I told myself I was gonna stop talking and here I go again. I think we're, way ahead of ourselves here. We're assuming that local control is as broad as we're pretending it to be. Regulation 43 allows limited local control, always allows for the locals to be more strict than Regulation 43 requirements. But I wouldn't go into this assuming this is like a planning process or planning review, or that the county has plenary authority over these systems. It's clear to me that the county does not. So I just want to make sure we go into this eyes wide open and not make those assumptions.
We're good with that, Eric. That sounds good.
Yeah, I ability to enforce. Again, I mean, that's something that has come up a lot and, with planning and so forth. And so, you know, maybe we are walking ourselves into more of a situation where there needs to be more enforcement or oversight. So definitely something to consider.
Okay. I feel like... we've discussed this as much as we need to for today. We look forward to hearing back from you in a couple of weeks, Scott, with at least some updated thoughts about where we might go with this.
All right, will do. Thanks.
Okay, I think we are on to our daily COVID-19 discussion, and I think we'd already kicked off one subject at least, which was a discussion of employees traveling out of state. Where do we want to go with this, guys?
Well, we have this document from Carrie and Dr. Harrington. I don't know if Eric has any specific comments about such a policy.
Well, I suppose one way to handle this would be to adopt a countywide mitigation protocol that addressed it and made it consistent for each department. That would probably offer the simplest and most expedient way of dealing with it. And we could say, we're not picking on Rouse County. This is an expectation of all businesses pursuant to their mitigation protocol. And so that would be one way of dealing with it. What I'm interested in here is at the bottom of the document, it talks about options of remaining in self-quarantine. I'm not sure I understand the two options fully. Maybe you guys do.
Oh, I'm not. What are we looking at? I missed this.
So. Eric forwarded it. It says suspicious message, travel guidelines version 2.
And this comes from Garrett Wiggins?
Sheriff Wiggins? No. This is from Brian Harrington.
Doug, you should have an email at 10:41 a.m. that came from Eric Knaus.
And this is in
Okay, I do have it. Okay, got it. Sorry, and I haven't looked at it. Thank you. Okay, thank you. At least
so,
while we're talking.
Eric, the two options, the difference is between getting tested and not getting tested. So option one is being in self-quarantine for 14 days. And if you don't develop symptoms during that time, then you just return to work and community involvement. And then the second option is you need to self-quarantine for 7 days and then get a test.
So that's the one that confused me, because I'm literal. And my question is, well, why not get a test right away?
Because we know that getting tested right away, it takes about a week before you would test positive if you had been exposed during the time you were traveling.
Well, that's kind of my point. So I understand that side of it. So you wouldn't get the test as soon as you got back here, and then do a retest, which is what I thought the process would look like. Because the chances are just as high that you were exposed at the beginning of your trip and you already test positive as soon as you come back.
So maybe that's a question for Dr. Harrington. But I think the point is, if you test negative right when you get back, you're not safe to return or safe to, you know, be in contact, close contact with other people. You and have then, to wait those 7 days.
And then the other issue, obviously, would be how to effectuate this. I think Tim's right. We're not in the business of telling our employees they cannot leave Rouse County or go to Arizona or wherever. Do we offer, is there something in place if they don't have sick leave, if they don't have vacation leave, or they don't want to use those things to enforce these quarantines, whether it's 7 or 14 days?
Well, one thing is they could work. If they were able to work from home, they could still work during that time. So that's one thing. I mean, obviously not
everybody can't.
Right.
You know, I've been reflecting on that early memo that was sent out. The last memo that I recall seeing, I pulled it up from my own memory, was on April 2nd. This was, we were early on in the practice of doing a memo to staff from BCC. Beth, you were heavily involved in that. And then Mark came on board right at the beginning of April. as I recall things, and we were giving them updates on that legislation that provided additional sick leave, et cetera. So that might be another mechanism to effectuate a countywide policy about quarantines. But I guess the threshold question are you all commissioners inclined to impose something like this or just let it be? I don't know.
You know, I understand the distinction, but it still feels kind of weird as we do all these handstands with our variance processes, et cetera, to open up the economy. And we're opening up our arms and welcoming people from Arizona, Texas, California, et cetera, et cetera. Please come to our community. And then we turn around and tell our own employees, oh no, when you go out and come into town, you have to observe this whole process.
The difference, though, is this is about the people who have to work in close proximity to this person. So this is more as an employer, right?
I understand the distinction, and yeah. I recognize that my queasiness may be a little bit
I guess the question I have is whether we would mandate these things. I am inclined to put out something that contains this information. The question to me is about the self-quarantine mandate, and and what guarantee do we have that these folks are actually quarantining rather than just, you know, not coming to work? And obviously there's no guarantee on any of this stuff, but I don't know. I find it a little challenging to mandate people to do this. I don't know. I'm sort of thinking out loud. Part of me wants to just recommend it and allow department heads to say that they're going to require people not to come into the office or something like that. But I don't know. The exposure to the other employees is my concern. If we don't do something.
That's exactly right. Sorry, Doug. So let's consider where this request comes from. These folks with plexiglass still work in close proximity to one another, and these folks don't have the ability to work from anywhere other than the office. So a pretty small group of concerned employees or department head as to that singular group. But maybe I'm wrong about this, but I'm assuming here that public health, meaning Carrie and Dr. Harrington, are asking for something greater than just Route County and maybe making some sort of requirements as to other employers as well. Like we talked about with the mitigation protocol, there's a section in there that contains it, but it doesn't seem to mandate anything where quarantines are concerned. My impression from recovery team this morning was from Carrie that it was a broader request and not just applicable to Route County employees.
So my question here and concern would be, we're incentivizing people to not tell anybody anything. I didn't go anywhere. You know, I stayed at home the whole weekend, by golly. Now, you didn't see me down in Dallas, Texas, unless you saw it on the video. So I worry about all of this. And, you know, it's a little bit overboard. And it brings down the regulatory, and again, let's all use our brains here. But I'm really a little bit leery. And that's why I was trying to head toward the testing concept, and I recognize Beth's concept where you could have it for 2 days and not come up. Evidently, that's what's happening or something. You could have it for 2 days and not and get tests after, you know, within those 2 days and come up negative and then still have it. So
again, well, I think it takes about a week, is my understanding.
Within a week or something, you said?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other interesting thing looking at this document and looking down under the heading of quarantine requirement, the language underneath that says things along the lines of you should or you should consider the following options directed at the individual. So I think the word requirement really doesn't quite jibe with the language underneath that heading. So,
well, I think there's more than one question, though. I mean, this is a recommended policy for the county. At least that's how we're considering it right now. I hear what Eric's saying, that maybe there's a request for something broader. I mean, until we have that request from Carrie and Dr. Harrington, I don't really think that's what we're considering. I think we're considering county policy. I do think there's some benefit in from a public health, a broader public health standpoint, in just modeling this for others, you know, having an example of what a policy would look like. And even if we don't require it, there's maybe an encouragement to others to adopt a similar policy to support health of the community. One other thing that Emmy brought up this morning on the recovery team was sort of the opposite situation. So someone who participates in a local event with a lot of out of town, like a wedding, a funeral, those kinds of things where the people are coming from a hot spot. So again, it's sort of that list of, you may be at high risk of bringing the virus back home, right? It's that same list, like you did these things with people who were coming from other places, just as a different consideration. I mean, those are high risk situations too. And so I don't know what that means exactly.
Well, we're doing a great job today of
Robin wants to speak.
Go ahead, Robin, please. Anything will help at this moment.
Thank you, commissioners. So last week, Carrie, Dr. Harrington, and I spoke. I think that was part of the kind of impetus of writing this. So you have two separate things I think that you're talking about, is that county policy for employees for travel, but then overall recommendations from the public health department about traveling for our county residents. So what I've been talking to Carrie about, and I haven't seen what Dr. Harrington wrote, so, you know, would love to you guys to forward it to me, but is we want to put something on our website and kind of advertise things of, if you do travel in and out of the state, because more and more county residents are traveling in and out of the state. So what are the recommendations? So I understand you're talking about county policy, but even if we took a first step of, you know, maybe this discussion on Wednesday at the Board of Health meeting of coming up with a concrete policy that we could message to the community, including our county employees, is if they travel out of state or if they go to a wedding with out of town, you know, any type of event with out of town guests, I think that would be helpful. I don't know how much you've been following what's happening in other states. My son's going to, I think I told you, to Ski Academy in Vermont and Maine. I don't know about New Hampshire, but they statewide have put a policy that if you come to the state out of state, you have to spend 14 days in quarantine, or you can get a test and spend 77 days in quarantine. Some states have, you know, kind of put these kind of policies for visitors a little bit more, I would say, a little bit more stringent than what we have. But I think if we did as a first step, to agree, if you all agreed on some type of policy that we could send to the public on what happens when you travel and what are some things that you can do, I think that would be helpful, because a lot of people are asking questions. And then we're getting a lot of questions, exactly what you had said, Commissioner Melton, of, okay, well, if I was exposed to a positive, you know, how soon, you know, do I, you know, should I test? And we put that message out before, you know, it's like anywhere from 3 to 7 days that you could contract the virus. But I think if we did that again and got something from you, that would be helpful. So I just wanted to relay that to you.
I think think on the broader conversation about the community, I mean, we need to have a lot more conversation about that, and we can talk about it at Board of Health, I think. I mean, this is just initial, but to Tim's point, you know, if we have visitors coming, it to require this of visitors would only make sense, right? If we're requiring it of our own residents, and that is a huge problem. I mean, that's not really realistic, and it doesn't jive with our, you know, our need to have the tourists here spending money, right? So I wouldn't think we would want to go there unless we were moving to a significantly more restricted state of things, if there was a necessity for that. But I would say, like we talked about last week, I think there are people who travel and they want to know what the right thing to do is. They want to know how they can protect the community and they can avoid bringing COVID into the community. And so I would suggest that some recommendations, like we talked about, make a lot of sense. But I think the real question is there, you know, what's the message, requirement or otherwise, to our employees about returning to work when they do this? Those other pieces I think we should talk about as the Board of Health with Carrie and Brian, but I do think we should have some consideration for what the county should be doing in response to the request that we have department heads who know they have staff traveling to these hotspots. And so how can they keep their staff safe?
And there's always the worst case scenario, which I specialize in, which is we have an employee that goes for their 2-week vacation somewhere, and they come back from their 2-week vacation and they're not somebody that can work remotely. And now we tell them, oh, well, we need to pay you 2 more weeks to stay at home until you're safe to come back to work.
Well, that's assuming that that's the way we would write it, Tim. I mean, we can have it however we want.
That's true.
Well, I would appreciate the advisory part, not the regulatory part, especially, you know, and again, just because you went on vacation down to a hotspot doesn't mean that you were in the hotspot area that all the people were carrying, other than going through the airport terminal or something too. So, I mean, you could be going down there and visit grandma, and grandma's been self-isolated for last 4 months. So it's kind of guilty unless proven innocent. So
where does this leave us, guys?
Does Mark have any, I mean, from a
Mark, save us
side of things? Can you rein us in here on the right direction to head?
Commissioners, I think one of the important considerations is that from a personnel standpoint, from a legal employment standpoint, I think we need to be careful and cautious in terms of what we do, and that we don't wind up getting crosswise with, again, when we think about all the considerations, we again don't have an opportunity maybe to have every single employee that can work remotely. So we're back into that same discussion that we had back in the early COVID environment in terms of how we balance that. So I think there's sometimes a fairness and equity question that comes up. We would be happy to reach out to some other entities, our neighbors, our other public entity neighbors, and say, has this come across your desk? And have you done anything that would equate to a policy, a recommendation, or anything that gives us a little bit of direction and a template going forward? So, you know, we always like to be in good company. So more than happy to go ahead and see if we can get some comparators out there. As a reminder, commissioners, I have, and I know it's not till the end of the week, but we now have a regular Friday morning discussion with the other resort county managers. So that's always been a great source of information. I'm happy to queue this up with them as well.
I think for our county policy, as I'm thinking about this, what I maybe would be inclined to do is identify some things that should be done to mitigate the risk when someone returns. And I think there could be a list of things that would maybe include working from home, but also if they're in an office environment where they typically work in close proximity to other folks, that maybe there be accommodations made that they can work more in isolation while they're in the office. You know, I don't know exactly, but perhaps rather than a self-quarantine requirement, there's kind of just, the whole thing is a recommendation about how to mitigate those situations. And maybe there's more than one option besides just someone remaining at home. And I'm hesitating a little because I'm picturing, you know, creating this situation where that person is like, you know, patient zero or whatever. But the reality is that if they have returned from somewhere where possibly they've contracted COVID-19, we want to reduce the risk of them spreading it to other people in their office. So even if they did in the end test positive, the best result would be that nobody else in that office also tests positive. And so maybe there's just more than one way to mitigate that risk besides just saying, oh, they have to stay at home for 14 days. I don't know.
Well, great. I'm glad we got that resolved. Well, Mark, you did say that you were going to reach out to some other counties and see what they're doing. That would be helpful.
I guess my bottom line on this is I would like to see us deal with this in some way. I don't know. I don't think it's ready, you know, to go from the form we have it in to being a county policy, but I'd like to see some more work and recommendations on what we can do personally. And then I support the idea of just not a requirement, but putting out some messaging into the community about here's the ways to help reduce the risk of spreading COVID if you've been traveling.
So I anticipate that this will come before the Board of Health probably this Wednesday as a more global request is what I would encourage you to think about and how to deal with that. Then there's the issue of Route County modeling for other businesses and Route County citizens without being too heavy-handed, deal with this travel issue and what it means for other employees. What I mean by heavy-handed is, to Doug's point, you know, are we going to encourage people just to simply not report? That might be worst case scenario in terms of exposure to other employees. And then what's in front of us right now is we have a clerk's employee who we know is going to travel to Arizona, an apparent hotspot, more locally, not just the state of Arizona, but a known hotspot where she's visiting family, and how to treat that. I got from Kim's email that she was hesitant on levying any restrictions on this employee for fear of not being consistent across the county.
Good for her.
Yeah, so to just kick it up to the commissioners and let us do the same thing.
Well, I think she wants consistency, though. I mean, exactly. Great problems if one department head is doing one thing and another one's doing something else, which I can appreciate.
I agree. You know, and again, I think we come up with something here that, I mean, just because you go into Arizona, you don't need to be stupid down there. So come on, let's just be healthy.
Well, and that too, I mean, there's encouraging people to travel in a safe way that reduces the likelihood of them getting, I mean, you can't require, what are we going to do, right? But we can give information to our employees about how to do that.
What I'd like to do is today, if she's available, talk to Kim, because what I recommended to her last week was to talk to the employee to get a sense of the level of concern. Does the employee have vacation or sick leave? Is she willing and happy to take that type of leave, rendering this a non-issue, at least what's in front of us right now? So I'd like to continue to have that conversation with her. Maybe we can resolve it more locally. I don't know. But all of this should probably be on your radar where Route County policy and then the broader public health policy is concerned.
Well, we'll get to talk about it more on Wednesday. That's for sure. So, okay. Are we ready to move on to anything else? Or do we have anything else to move on to?
I don't have anything else. Oh, I do have just a quick schedule update for you guys. Unfortunately, I have to, I had to schedule a doctor's appointment for 11:30 on Wednesday. So I'll probably miss the tail end of our board.
Hold on. By then. I'll be right back. I think I got somebody at the door.
Okay.
It's a stud horse. Is at the door.
Got it.
No, it was not his horse shore driving by. So,
But anyway, I'll just miss, hopefully not much, but maybe just the end of our Board of Health meeting on Wednesday.
Okay. Doug, you got anything?
So I guess, Beth, back to your conversation on this Protect Your Neighbor Committee. You know, maybe the same thing that the city did with the policy committee is if you can get some minutes or something, notes, and whether, I don't know who could do that or whatever, but that would be fine to maybe keep us all in the loop on all that stuff. So,
there's no committee per se, although maybe at some point there will be, but I think we should talk about, is it duplicative to have the policy committee and that committee? It might end up sort of being the same thing.
I'm fine with that too. And I'm fine with the policy committee because it's morphed into that and you can take that over. And I'm fine with that too. I just want to make sure that
let's talk about it as it plays out. I want to start with individual conversations, but Mo sent us that email that he basically has created a line of operation for Protect Our Neighbors and having me leading that. But each of our other folks on the recovery team have their own tasks that they're completing in relation to Protect Our Neighbors. So for now, it's just part of the recovery team. And Mo is planning to send us notes from the recovery team meetings like he did last week, which I thought was really helpful. So I sent him just bullets about what I'm working on related to that. So I think I'll definitely talk to you guys when and as needed, but I'll also, you know, my updates on where I am with that will just be in those recovery team notes too, so that we don't always have to have a lot of conversation about it. You can just stay in the loop. But if there's anything else, let me know. But I'm just starting with some outreach to each of the individual entities to just kind of start the conversation.
Well, that sounds great. So I guess the other question I'd have is, so is there anything pressing that we need to have the policy discussion was going to happen tomorrow at Tuesday?
Well, do you want me to plan to join you? I mean, that would be the other option, is I could come and just let them know where we're at.
That might be the agenda. That would be fine.
I'm happy to do that. Well, let me tell you from the discussion this morning, in terms of where we need to build our capacity, one is we need some more support from the medical community to provide testing, was what Carrie told me. So we need to kind of figure out, and I'm going to talk with her about how do we get there, you know, what's the best way to do that and facilitate that. But the burden of testing can't all be on the county if we're going to really expand our system and move forward. And then, as you guys know, we need support with the education, monitoring, and enforcement side of things. And then Carrie did indicate that she'd like to have some more kind of backup contact tracers in the queue. And the hope was that we might ask for each of the municipalities to identify maybe 3 or 4 people that could be trained to support contact tracing, again, sort of as a backup. And I actually brought up I don't know what you guys saw this weekend. You were probably mostly at home. I was mostly at home, but holy cow, do I expect we're going to need some contact tracing in 2 weeks. There just was a lot of activity. I didn't get any because people know better, but my husband got a lot of invitations to things. And, you know, I just am suspecting that if we're going to keep this thing under control, we're going to need significantly more contact tracing sort of on the back burner in case. And Carrie said it would be great if we could have each of the municipalities identify a handful of people that could be trained and just kind of on call as needed for that. So those are sort of the asks I think we need to make to our partners, at least as of now. And I'd be happy to summarize that with those folks. And then Mo had a thought that we would, in the future, maybe have a little more direct involvement from the other town managers in some of this conversation, just to make sure we're supporting, you know, resource allocation and partnership for all of these lines of operation. And, you know, I just indicated I didn't think we were ready to just bring them in yet. I think we need to have we need to make sure everybody's on the same page before we just bring some of the managers in to lead the charge on this. We need to make sure they have good direction from their elected officials about what their role should be and what they should be doing, is my opinion.
So what I'm hearing from you, Beth, is you think it's a good idea, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, to pursue the objectives of Protect Our Neighbor, even if we're not interested in entering Protect Our Neighbor, and that the discussion about whether or not we want to pursue entering Protect Our Neighbor will actually come subsequent to some of these other activities that you think we should pursue, not first.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's we don't know enough, honestly, in my opinion, about everything regarding Protect Our Neighbors yet. I do think we need to move forward. I think we need to be proactive in moving forward with the framework. I think it's a good framework. And I think we need to just understand more, what does it look like when you're in Protect Our Neighbors, and what does that mean? You know, I had a great conversation on Friday with Kara Stoller. We just talked for a while about this, and I brought that up to her, the point that, you know, I don't really know what it gains us. And she said, well, you know, Beth, we don't have to go to 500 person gathering size, but maybe we have more local control over, you know, what's open and what's not open and what capacity and some of those kinds of things. But I just don't think we know yet. I think we need to understand, but I still think there's value in the other work as we do that evaluation. Because, I mean, you can see from what I'm saying, if we could have all of these partners in the community supporting with testing and contact tracing and education and monitoring, we're going to be in a lot better place overall. And we're going to have a lot more ability for reopening while keeping things under control, regardless of whether that means we're in the Protect Our Neighbors stage or not.
That sounds great to me. I'm good with all of that. And when's the disco music start at your house?
I know, that's my favorite office mate just helping me out over here. He likes to make sure we have a festive atmosphere.
Nice, very nice.
So back to the policy meeting then. So do you want to get with Kendra then and get something? And you know, yep. And again, so I don't think there's any reason why we need to keep this quiet or whatever. So, I mean,
no, both, I agree.
And again, both of us can sit in on it. So we kind of have, but it'd be a good venue to have breakout to have the discussion with the rest of the players that are on the policy committee. So,
yes, I'll plan to join you. Is that still Tuesday at 3:30? Is that when it is?
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
Okay. Yep. I'll plan to join tomorrow. And Kendra, I'll get you some information for the agenda.
And I don't think we have anything else we need to talk about at that, unless somebody else has something. So
if we could just have that, that would be great.
Okay. May I recommend that, unless you're going to do it, Beth, maybe I can send Kendra all the links from the state for Protect Our Neighbors, because I was just reading the FAQs, and that really shows about the virus count, and I think it's a lot lower than most people would expect.
Yeah, we can include that in the information. I'm just going to send you something pretty brief, Kendra, but yeah, we can include that. Okay. Whether from Robin or from me, either way.
I'll send.
I didn't have anything else, so we're good.
I think I'm good too.
My internet bombed out for a minute, but I'm back. I don't have anything else. So are you done talking with Robin? We're not done talking.
Sounds like we're good.
Robin, good. We're good. Okay, and then Mark, did you have anything else for us?
Commissioner, thank you.
I think we're good to adjourn, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Thank you.